everybody. Welcome to the Toku Podcast, to the best show about tokusatsu you've probably never heard of. Actually, this isn't. It's an extra that I'm putting up, and the same week that I'm also putting up 10... Actually, not even 10. It's just, like, fucking shit. That was a shit
another
list.
Another list thingy. I don't know, man.
List about writer openings that was garbage because people kept fucking voting for the wrong songs. Anyways. Today we have a little bit of an extra for everybody. I thought this would be cool because I've known this guy for a little bit. I follow his stuff very closely. It's mostly his art stuff because his art stuff is really cool. So, you know, without me, you know, basically hogging it up and having to explain to you, I shall let the man himself do it. So, sir, please, you know, tell our listening audience who you are, what you do, and why you do it.
Hey there. So, my name's Alejandro, but I go by Ale. And I am the writer and artist of this new series called Masked Heroes Time Strikers. So as, of course, a big Toku fan, you know, growing up, you know, Power Rangers, of course, segueing to Super Sentai and Kamen Rider. I've always wanted to do my own stories, especially since I feel like sometimes, like, as much as I love these series, there's always more that can be done and should be done. And I look at it as more of a genre instead of a brand. And so I wanted to start my own brand under Masked Heroes, and I'm launching that under Time Strikers, which is something I'm really excited about.
And as we've also mentioned, for the one that you're doing now, you actually do have a Kickstarter. So tell us a little bit about that, like, you know, what, you know, where people can go for that, where people, what else people can do besides, you know, donating and such and such.
Yeah, so the Kickstarter just launched at the time of this recording about 5 days ago, so we still have quite a bit of time left, and if you want to find it, you can Google Masked Heroes, Time Strikers, Kickstarter. It'll be like the first thing that pops up, or if you follow me on my social media pages, which under AFJ Art, especially on Instagram, really active on there, you can find it. And what we're doing with the Kickstarter is basically getting the book to life. So I've already started drawing it. I'm about a third of the way through the book. I've hired a colorist. He's a good friend of mine, but he's like a legit colorist. Like, he has worked on books for DC, Transformers, other books like that. Really cool dude. And he knows how to bring my art to life. But, you know, I'm still paying him. So the Kickstarter goes to paying, you know, my illustrator, paying my editor and letterer, and then, of course, ultimately getting physical copies of the books printed. And it's done a really, really well launch so far. Like, our goal, minimum goal to get what we want printed is $2,500, and we're basically at like $2,200 right now at the time of this recording, which is really cool. What that means is too is basically I'm gonna have 3 weeks, if we really fund this, to like build up what we call stretch goals, and which is basically every new like goal that we hit beyond our goal, anyone that pledges for a physical reward, no matter how small it was, like let's say you just pledge for a regular copy of the comic, you will get every stretch goal that we hit, which is really cool. And I'm doing something really unique with this one. I'm doing under, so my idea with this whole comic, Time Strikers, is that it's a launch of a, I don't know what the way it was to call it, but a quote unquote universe, cinematic universe type thing, where it's a cohesive and plotted out thing where this is not just the only team, this is not the only kind of hero. I want to have like other Toku inspired heroes, magical girls, other masked heroes, characters inspired by like every genre, metal hero, Kamen Rider, Sentai, anything in there. I want it to be a big part of it, build up to it. So these, I have these masked hero trading cards that there's various pledges that you'll get, like one card, three cards, six cards. And my stretch goals are going to be extra cards. So it'll be really, really cool. If I can find a way to get them put into little foil packs, I will, because, you know, who doesn't love opening, like, Pokemon card packs to see what they're going to get? We'll see what I can do with that one, but that's something really fun that I'm doing, and there's, like, a bunch of other rewards, and even if you can't pledge, you could always just share the post, get it out there. I really, really would love, like, the Toku community to come together, and there's not a lot, there is a lot of independent stuff out there, but surprisingly, not a lot of comic books.
Yeah, so I was about to ask, so obviously this is 100% self-published by you yourself, of course.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, so what I do, and I have other comics that I do, but basically what I do is I get the Kickstarter, you know, everyone pledges. I think of it as like a pre-order with like extra bonuses. You basically pre-order, you put into it, you're going to get a bunch of cool stuff that no one else gets. And then that allows me to travel to various conventions across the country that I can do. And I go and table and I sell my artwork and I, you know, fan art and things like that. But I also sell the comic book and, you know, get things out there. I'm going to be doing that exactly with Time Strikers.
And one of the coolest things for me personally that it's cool to actually like support this guy is he is a, you know, I don't know if you mind saying he is a Texas native, just like I am. So it's always cool to see someone, you know, from, you know, my state, you know, always supporting the local boys. It's always nice to see that. Because I do you do the rounds locally in conventions. Personally, in any conventions, but I do know that you do like quite a bit of convention runnings now and again.
Yeah, yeah. I try to do one or two a month, depending on like what my job lets me do. I'm currently fighting with them to let me do as much as I was, you know, told I was going to be allowed to do, and that's a whole different story. But
that's the story of life, ain't it?
Yeah. I was in Laredo at the beginning of the year. I'm actually going to be in Dallas, hopefully in July. There's a little convention called like the Texas Latino Comic Con. It's like a free event, and I won't have Time Strikers by then. I'll have Time Strikers by August. But yeah, I'm all over the place. I try to go as far as I can. I'm actually going to Georgia in June next month for Ranger Stop and Pop.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Funny enough, did you actually go to the one that came down? I believe it was in Corpus. Was it Corpus or
Houston? It was Houston. So funny enough about that one was that was actually a part of my job fighting with me. They told me I couldn't take off that weekend to go down there. So like the one artist that most people expected to go down there from Texas was not able to go. And that was me. And weirdly enough, I did the California one last year, which was really cool, by the way. Like, surprisingly, for a convention that mostly focused on the brand of Power Rangers, you had a lot of Sentai fans that showed up and Kamen Rider fans, which was the coolest thing. Like, I saw, I was able to see, like, there was like an Xaid cosplayer, Gaim cosplayers. Like, I was like, okay, that is dope. And I had a lot of Kamen Rider commissions too, so that was even better.
That's kind of the cool thing I do like about Ranger Stop in general is the fact that it's actually giving us just for ourselves, because for years we've had conventions for, you know, Kaiju, we've had Godzilla conventions, horror movie conventions, but nothing really for Tokyo. I mean, sure, it started off mostly for Power Rangers, but as the years have gone on, I've seen that less about just Power Rangers, more about, well, Tokyo in general, and I'm glad about that, because I'm personally not someone who thinks that should come to the West adapted-wise, but I definitely do like the fact that they're being seen here from everyone around.
Yeah, and I have like a weird theory about that too. Is I think like the reason why, do you remember that big tweet that went viral where he was like, "Oh, the West doesn't care about Kamen Rider"?
Yeah, sure. Kura said that.
And, yeah, so I think the reason for that is they do a lot of their value with toys, right? And, you know, I wouldn't say that like there's a big Kamen Rider following, but there's a big enough, and we all buy toys, but we all buy it through people who buy it in Japan. So all these like money that gets tracked over there in Japan, like they just see like the Japanese buying toys. They're not able to measure the imports.
Yeah, none of it really goes back to them anyways, so.
True. The only thing with that though, and I've been able to, I've kind of always followed this, because when that tweet came out, it kind of like sparked me into overdrive when I looked through that, because to myself, where people come from, we're like, we do, I mean, let's be fair, we do have a good following, and Jay and I have talked about this before. I don't ever believe that it'll be big enough for Toei to really take interest, even if they could see those imports. Because seeing even the sales figures, I mean, Jay, you and I have seen the sales figures for Sentai toys in the past 3 years. Those things have just...
They've tanked pretty hard, yeah.
Yeah. And I would just love to see it, and like, subtitled on Crunchyroll.
I would like that, too. Then again, we don't... See, that was the thing that I was talking about the other day as well. We actually had a question about that. The thing is, they don't usually release their view numbers, especially when we had Amazon Prime come here, which was a big thing for me. Well, they did, and that's kind of disappointing, because if we did know, that would either, you know, tell us to actually hope or not. We're in that weird middle ground where we're just like,
that's right. I mean, they call it Amazon Riders, right?
Yeah.
They just call it Kamen Rider Amazons.
No, they still the called it Amazon Riders on Prime Air.
Oh,
I don't
they?
Really know why.
Well, I mean, like, that's the thing. Like, I wish that they would at least show us the numbers. I mean, obviously Amazon's never going to do that because it's kind of hard to really show where people have seen it because, you know, people can pirate that shit, so it's obvious. But do you get to see that? Again, I'm not someone who thinks they should be adapted, but I think they should be seen. Like, I think I know, who was it? I think it was in California, Chad told me, where they had, like, a small mini screening of Generations Forever Final. That's a stupid fucking name.
It's because you put two different movie names together, but then again, they were the same exact name twice.
They're the same movie.
They were the same movie twice. That's not the problem.
Movie. They are all.
Hey, at least it's not as confusing as the Superhero Tyson names.
Oh my god. Remember when they called it Superhero Tyson? Oh man.
Yeah.
Classic.
I still love the, and like, I probably get a lot of flack for this one, but my favorite Tyson is definitely like the, I think it's GP3 is what they call it.
Oh, that one was fun.
Like, I love that whole, like, Wacky Races Kamen Rider race at the end of the movie.
Only See, I always complained, I wanted that to be the whole movie there.
Yeah, that would have been legit.
I remember that movie as, the only reason I remember that movie is for two reasons. One, the theme song was drilled into my head. Mock dying over and over is just fucking hilarious to me.
Mock's my favorite writer, besides Black.
He just keeps dying over and over. That's funny to me. It's like making Diabolo into a comedic fucking character. It's great.
Yeah, and he's killed by a character named Cheetah Snail.
He's killed by everything.
Cheetah Snail.
Everyone. To be fair, it was a Showa villain, I think.
Yeah, no. Which I mean, I love Showa stuff though.
Yeah,
but going into that, actually, I would be able to bring in more. To introduce TRR because you actually posted on a Facebook group that will not be named because fuck you. Anyways, it was posted to a Facebook group because I actually my favorite aspects of your art is just the way you draw suits. They're very. The right word. They're almost anthropomorphized, I guess that's a weird way to say it. Humanized.
Realistic.
They feel very personalized to the person who, yes, you would say.
Yeah, actually, so it was funny, I was talking to, so I went to my buddy's house, because I have like 3D models made of the helmet, and one of the weird things part was, do I keep the lips on there, right? Because the lips, I wanted to do like a Deadpool thing, right? You know, like in the Deadpool comics, you know, his eyes are very expressive for Spider-Man, right? You know, like, it doesn't make any sense that his eyes could move.
Yeah.
But it leads to the storytelling. So in my comic, the lips, every time, certain situations, I want the lips to have different expressions. They're never going to open up, but, you know, if they're happy, they're going to have a hint of a smile. If they're frowning, they'll frown. If it's kind of like a, let's get in there, it'll be kind of like a erg face. That's the best way to describe it. And then when they take their helmets off, the whole mouthpiece is just going to, like, flatten and disappear.
Oh, that's pretty
cool. I don't ever want to, like, talk about it. I just want to show it, right? Because, you know,
it's just
writing,
there.
You just, yeah, it's just there. So I still.
I was just going to say, because one of my first, one of the first pieces I saw from you was your drive piece, when you drew drive. And just the way that you made certain curvatures in the suit.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's right. That is how we become Facebook friends.
This is kind of like a no shit type of thing, but. The way that you were able to make the curvatures made it more seem like, yeah, this would come from a car. And I like that because, again, you very much personalized it to their gimmick. Because, you know, obviously suits have to be a certain way. If not, there's no fucking way that can move in that, a.k.a. Kiva. Thank you for breaking my back.
You can't breathe in these things. Talk to
yeah,
them.
That's why I like when you draw certain suits because you make them as rough as I guess as rough or rigid or as smooth and, you know, curvy as they need to be for that type of rider, and I like that. So that's why I like the designs that you give too, because it, well, not only does it seem like it's more suited to what you know how to do, but it very much it pops out of the page in a way that a lot of other things don't.
Thanks. Yeah, and it's kind of funny too. It's kind of a full circle. So I'm assuming you guys know who Shotaro Ishinomori is, right? And, you know, the guy who's like godfather of everything. So my favorite manga growing up, and this is even before I knew about Kamen Rider, was Cyborg 009. It was weird. I went to, and I knew it was on like Cartoon Network back in the day, like really shortly. But I had I went to, I think it was not Big Lots, but Dollar General. Yeah, it was Dollar General. I remember it. And I'm in there, and this is like my weeaboo phase. So if I saw an anime DVD somewhere, like I was gonna buy it no matter what the hell it was. That's why I have like a really creepy DVD of like this anime called Please Twins. So I saw the DVD for Cyborg 009 there, and it had like the first like 12 episodes on. It was a 12 episode set, and I put it in. Of course, like I was like, oh my god, this is Tai from Digimon who's doing the main character. And I loved it. It like blew my mind. It was like this epiphany moment. Like I've been drawing for a while at this point, you know, drawing Pokemon comics. I had my Naruto phase, you know, that weeaboo phase. Did. Yeah. And I had this moment where I was like, this is the coolest art style I've ever seen. I've always had an affinity for like that Galaxy Train style, but this even went more so. And I was like, I had to know more. And so I deep dive on a Wikipedia and found out about Shotaro Ishinomori. And then, of course, growing up as a Power Ranger fan and never really getting out of it, I found out, and again, this is really before, like, the internet was, like, as big on social media. This was still in, like, MySpace days. And I found out that, you know, he did Super Sentai and Kamen Rider, and this is when I find out about all of this. So my art style is super influenced by Shotaro. Like, I love everything he does. I love the way, like, no one ever really talks about it, but, like, no one ever really posts his like Kamen Rider manga or, you know, the Sentai manga that he did. And he did a lot of them past Cyborg 009.
To be fair with those manga, while you can find raws, they're very sparse and translations because, I mean, sadly, not many people touch them.
I think from what I remember, I think there was like an official translation, but you can't find it anywhere. But
so yeah, Comixology actually has a ton of his stuff, like all officially translated in scans.
Yeah, I thought it was them who had it.
Yeah, they have Kamen Rider on there. I know for a fact they have Kamen Rider Ichigo, and of course they have Cyborg 009. I actually own both on Comixology, which is like super cool. I haven't checked any like Skullman or anything like that, but still, like, it's Skullman's, I just love the way he draws like the suits, and so I guess that's where a lot of my influences come from live. I have a very toony cartoon style, and when I see these suits, I want to give them that like similar feeling. Like if he had come back and he had to like draw Heisei style suits, what would he do? And that's kind of my mindset when I'm like drawing like my Kamen Rider fan art.
Yeah, it's really noticeable here looking at your stuff. It's very evident where your influences are from.
Yeah.
Which is why Mach is probably my favorite like Heisei rider, just because his suit is very much like classic with the scarf and the bug eyes and the antennas.
That's I was about to say, reminded me of Skullman. I mean, geez, that's going way back for me, right there.
Yeah.
But like like we said before, like as you finished mentioning, it does, you know, you can very much see, you know, Ishinomori style. And again, I love Ishinomori style. I know a lot of people off at it nowadays. Maybe it's because it's not, you know, what they're used to, but it's very, I mean, it's almost like a completely unique, rare style that's not really seen out anymore. Because it was, for me, it felt very much between okay, so here's your Astro Boy, and here's your Fist of the North Star, and it's right in the middle, just in that sweet spot where it's like cartoony, but at the same time, it looks just, you know, good enough where you're like, okay, I want to read more of this.
Yeah, it's cartoony enough where it's, you know, you don't really take everything super seriously, but it's realistic enough and it's detailed enough where you can get invested and you can take the stories seriously.
Yeah, the worst thing people ever say about my artwork is like it's chibi, which I completely disagree. There's no like, I don't do the whole big head and tiny little body thing. Like again, I was a weeaboo back in the day. I ain't afraid to admit it. You know, I did chibi art back in like high school, but now I think people have a weird idea of what they consider the words I think they're looking for is it's stylized, and to them they're just gonna call anything with big eyes chibi, which is like the worst thing in the world. I think the only artist who is probably currently using a similar art style, and I get this a lot and I have it and I love the book, so I'm like trying not to take it off as an insult, but Scott Pilgrim.
I see a little bit of it. I can definitely
I can definitely see like his, while it does, you know, use his are much more rigid lines, yours are much softer than his are. Like yours do look like outlines keeping them in place. His, you know, they have the thick outlines and it very much looks like, okay, this was drawn to stay in place like that.
Yeah, and I don't mind the comparison too much. It used to bother me back in the day because I was like, are you trying to say that I copied this guy? Because, you know, I have receipts. I can prove that I was drawn like this before I ever read Scott Pilgrim. But, I mean, I still love the Scott Pilgrim comic book, and usually that's what I can sell it to some people. I'll be like, hey, if you like Scott Pilgrim, check this out. And then, you know, I get them that way. Whatever I can do to get a sale.
So, you mentioned before with recording or not, but you mentioned before that you had another comic that you did beforehand, before this one.
Yeah, so my first...
I was going to say, is that kind of playing into this one, or are you just basically trying to start fresh with this one?
Yeah, so I'm kind of starting fresh with this one. So my first comic that I did, and this was in 2016, like first one I should say, as in like I actually got physically printed and like self-published, was it's called Xeno Guardian Redvisor Go, which I work with another writer, and he's a great writer. He definitely like he's really good. It was just, you know, it's hard to find time for some people to work on it when, you know, he's a school teacher, you know, and he's doing a lot of other things. But he's a great writer, and the story is awesome. Like, I love it. It's about a young girl who grew up watching a TV show called Xeno Guardians, which essentially is a Toku Power Rangers-like show. And she goes to meet the actor who played her hero growing up, and he turns out to be a jerk at the convention she's at. And so when walking around, she finds the actor's sunglasses, and when she puts them on, she ends up transforming into his character, the Red Visor, getting all the superpowers. And it's a big story about nostalgia, right? Like, it's the whole idea is that like our nostalgia is what gives us powers, and for her it's like quite literally. So it's an examination of nostalgia. It's just a slow burn. We put out our first book in like 2017, and then last year I put out the next book, and it just doesn't, as much as I would love to get issue 3 out this year, I'm not sure if that's something that's going to happen. And as someone who's trying to make a career out of this, I figured, you know what, it's my turn to write, and let's create my own brand. And that's where, and this is something I kind of wanted to do with Xeno Guardians, but it doesn't work in the narrative because it's about nostalgia. It would be weird to have a team in the comic when it's really supposed to focus like on one character's nostalgia. There's other characters, and they fit other themes, not inherently related to Toku. And of course, I've also become like a way better artist. I actually kind of started redrawing some of Redvisor number one just to see like what it would look like with my modern art style, and it's like night and day. So... starting over new, I'm taking everything I've learned. In fact, my biggest regret with Redvisor Go is that it's in black and white for a comic that's called Redvisor Go, which, I mean, it does look like an old Ishinomori manga. Mm-hmm. So it has that charm. But this one I'm getting colored, which is really cool. And it really helps separate each character because they're red, blue, and pink. But I want to start my superhero universe because I don't want to just limit to myself to the three characters. So we actually have a plan for this book, which is really cool. I never plan out anything in my life. And I got like 10 issues. This is going to be, it's a 10 issue arc for Time Strikers. And then if things go well, I'll do like maybe some like other like 5 issue comics about another team, or maybe a one shot. And then this is thinking way ahead, but let's say things start to expand really well, I could bring on other writers and artists who want to contribute stories to this like extended universe.
Yeah, I was going to mention that. So as soon as this is done, and this is, you know, because a lot of people use this type of model, a lot of game developers and even writers themselves. So keep it, like, let's say this, you know, we're hoping here, of course. Let's say, like, the comic does, you know, it's a big success and everything. Are you going to use the success to jump off with that same money to use to, like, make other comics? Or would you do, like, what some people do, you know, keep doing Kickstarters for, you know, individual, like, projects you do?
So generally speaking, my model currently has been almost nearly a Kickstarter for every issue. which can be stressful. I did three Kickstarters back to back for like basically three different comic books last year. And that was my biggest regret, was each one was kind of a different project, with two of them being related. One was a crossover for Red Visor, and the other one was a Red Visor number two, and the other one was a Western comic that I put out in like the fall. But I think with this one, I definitely want to have focus. And if this does become a rearing success, like I'm planning on being smart with this one. Once we start tabling, I'm going to sell the comic for $10, and then I'm going to start saving money from each comic sale and basically create like a savings account. This is like my own plans, because the biggest part of our Kickstarter is not just printing, but it's also literally paying our colorists. I would love to be able to pay for a colorist out of pocket, making the next goal for, if I do a Kickstarter, basically treat it like a pre-order, right? So Time Trekkers issue two is coming around. You loved issue number one. Well, here's issue number two. And the goal is a lot smaller because I already paid the colorist out of pocket. You know, he's been paid ahead of time. We got it. We did it. And the cool opportunity about Kickstarter is it allows me to give anyone who basically quote unquote pre-orders extra things. So I mentioned trading cards earlier in the recording. This first set, there's going to be six different cards, not counting any of the stretch rewards that may or may not happen down the road. But in issue number two, I'm going to do like six different cards. That way, not only are you getting the comic books, but you're building this nice, cool trading card collection for any time that you support the project. And that's kind of the structure I hope to get, is I'll probably still do Kickstarters because it's a good way to basically get pre-orders for the book. And then give more to the people who do support the project continuously.
It's a very nice idea. Excuse me.
One of my final questions about, you know, the project in general, is there anything that you can actually like? Anything you can tell us plot wise? Well, you know, without giving too much away, because of course, you know, the plot's everything for this. So, but can you tell us, you know, what it's about and everything? Because, you know, there's people out there who. Pictures, they see everything, but they want to know a little bit more about what's going on.
Yeah, absolutely. So the story, it focuses on these trio of siblings, Samantha, Emily, Jason. They are orphans, if you will. They've been essentially raised by the Galactic Patrol organization, which is this like large central organization dedicated to fighting evil all across the galaxy. And they have several divisions, and they belong to the Time Striker division, which is their job is focused on to addressing alerts to, you know, threats to time and space and timelines and all that stuff. Kind of, I don't want to compare it, but shorthand term, they're like Doctor Who meets a Sentai team. They are time force. Basically. Yeah, if Time Force actually time traveled. Which is literally
comparison.
Which is literally how my co-creator pitched it to me. He was like, hey, have you thought about doing a team where it was like Time Force, but they actually time traveled? And I was like, and he called it Time Strikers. And I was like, whoa, Dan, that's a great name. I got to do something with this. So it's going to focus on their journey as they basically travel to different timelines. And it may not even be on Earth. I might make up fun little sandbox fake paths for other planets, right? Like, again, very Doctor Who-y. And my goal is to not use time traveling as a plot gimmick, but more as a setting. I'm not going to be trying to worry about different timelines being invented. I'm not going to try to make it overly complicated. I just want it to be a cool, fun set piece where they travel back in time, you know, and then do their thing and go back. And obviously there's a large villain that is presiding over all of this.
That's probably a smart idea. A lot of series try to use time travel in that way, and they make it too complex, and it bogs down the story overall, and it makes it I don't really know how to put it. It's like a what could have been. It's like, okay, well, why didn't they just focus on, you know, this stuff that they had fleshed out instead of trying to worry about the time travel stuff that wasn't important, I guess. Guess the best way to put it there.
Yeah, exactly. And so I want to focus on the characters first. And it really is ultimately going to be about them kind of discovering why they're orphans, which is going to come out in like the later issues. Like, things are going to go down. And it's going to be lighthearted, but it's going to get serious when it happens. You know, like I'm hoping to balance that like level of, these are three characters who obviously have a lot of love for each other, and they're going to be quippy, and their banter is going to be great, and they all have very different extreme personalities, but it's going to get into them and their family and discussing like who were their parents, you know, who were their mom and dad, and what do they provide to this like larger organization. And we're going to use this comic to plant a lot of seeds as well, you know, so you're going to see characters that pop in and out that who could easily show up in like other projects in my quote unquote universe.
Yeah. So going from that, so I should actually ask you, making a comic book, obviously you come from someone who does like comic books. So can I ask, who are some, you know, writers, artists, you know, anybody in general? Cause I would assume, are you writing or are you, just,
so this one's a really cool, unique thing for me. This is like the first comic that I'm fully scripting. I'm not alone in that regard. I mentioned Dan before, but Dan is kind of like my co-creator of the universe. He's never really done any like creative books or writing or art or anything like that, but he's been a big supporter of mine who has some weirdly good ideas. Like he must be just thinking about his stuff all of the time. And he pitched me again the idea of Time Strikers, and talking to him, we came up with the characters and what their names would be. We came up with their family dynamic, and we came up with plots and characters and villains, and we came up with the goal and plan. And so I call him a plotter, right? So he basically comes up like, hey, these are the story plots that I would like to see happen. And I work with him on that. And then I took those ideas that we paragraphed and those characters that we paragraphed, and I write them in a script. So, you know, page one, panel one, description, text, dialogue, all that stuff. And then once I finished the script, I showed him, you know, I was like, all right, are we like this? Are we good? All right, cool. And once we're good, I go and draw from it. I take the script, I draw all of my pages I'm going on, and then I send them to the guy who is my editor. He's also the guy lettering the book. He'll be like, hey, that art is good, you're good. Or he'll be like, that sucks, change that. And then once I change it, it goes to my colorist and he'll color it. Once it's colored, it goes back to Jeremiah, my letterer, and he'll do the lettering. And that's kind of how the book is made.
So like I was going to ask, who exactly, you know, inspired you like comic wise, you know, writers,
influences. Artists, yeah. Okay. I wasn't sure if it's, I didn't know that was a question. Yeah. So do you guys know who Darwin Cook is?
I feel like you've said, if you mentioned something he's made, I'll know who that is, but not off the top of my head, no.
So he was pretty involved with DC. He did a comic that is like my favorite comic of all time. It's called Justice League: The New Frontier.
Paul.
That's not ringing a bell for me, actually.
Yeah, so it's a really cool comic.
I'm very much in tune with, like, how would I say, the quote-unquote modern age, but like starting like earlier modern to like bronze, I guess you would say.
Modern, but not quite modern, quote-unquote.
Well, if that's the case,
don't actually know how to list our fucking eras, apparently, in comic books.
We can't just use numbers. We have to come up with fancy names, guys. It's
yeah,
unique.
Well, in that case, you would actually probably love this comic. So it's a modern comic, right? Like this comic... And Darwin Cook's dead, unfortunately. He died like 2 years ago, 2 or 3 years ago. Yeah, and actually, you would know stuff he's done because he did character designs for Justice League Unlimited. A lot of like Bruce Timm's credit on that. Yeah, he did actually the character designs a lot of those characters, which is really cool. He's done a lot of stuff for DC. He did a lot of covers. He did a book, I think it was a Question for a while. He's got a very unique art style and could be often compared to Bruce Timm, but I think... his art style is a little bit more refined. He also does writing, which is the new frontier. So it's a book that maybe came out, oh god, I want to say like maybe 8 years ago, possibly around that time, maybe a little bit earlier, longer or sooner, don't remember. But it's a golden age era comic, right? It's about the Justice League during like the 40s, but it's all like modern artwork. It's a kind of a retelling of those stories as like the Justice League was formed. In fact, it kind of did like what Civil War was doing before Civil War, I think it was. Because in it, it's like in the 40s, it's like post-World War II, right? It's kind of like the Red Scare. And they're equating superheroes to the whole Red Scare. So people are like, oh, superheroes are clearly communists. So like Batman is told he can't do his thing. So Batman goes underground. Wonder Woman leaves America. Superman basically kind of just stays and works with the government, if you will. And this... alien army, dinosaur alien thing invades the planet, and there was a Justice Society that's been disbanded, and so all these new heroes who are kind of like running away from the law all have to band together with the government to fight off this army, and that's like the formation of the Justice League.
That sounds like something I actually have read before. Again, it's
it does kind of sound like an amalgamation of a couple of different stories, but that does sound neat. I might check that out.
Yeah, and there's a really good animated movie for it too. I definitely recommend checking out that movie.
Yeah, I think I have read it, but again, I get at this point I've read so much. I'm pretty sure I forgot like my name. But yeah, like this does sound like something I'd be interested in, because again, like I'm very much like I'm stuck around there, you know. You know, Alan Moore finally started coming in, you know, all those, I guess you could say the quote unquote big people of, again.
Oh, yeah. And Alan Moore is great. Like, I like Alan Moore. What he did with Watchmen is amazing. Frank Miller, before he went crazy, was awesome. Yes. And I'll admit it, I actually non ironically love All Star Batman and Robin.
Hey,
I guess like, I'm going to play devil's advocate. There's some stuff in All-Star Batman and Robin that's not, you know, completely batshit insane and terrible.
He's the goddamn Batman, Jay.
He's the goddamn Batman. And we're going to say it 8 times an issue because he found out what internet memes are.
Also, that whole, like, that whole scene where he, like, paints the room yellow and offers lemonade to the Green Lantern is, like, one of the greatest moments in comic book history. I love that moment.
That's the power move right there.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I guess my other favorite writer is Gail Simone. You know, not to get on any like pedestal here, but like I really like what she does, and her Secret Six run is a stupid amount of fun. And that's what I like about comics is when they're fun. I don't necessarily need them to be depressing or like everybody dies. I just want like
grim
a good
dark.
Yeah, and that's like I think that's a thing that like some like when DC reboots Suicide Squad every single time, they like miss the idea of like how fun that the Suicide Squad comics used to be. Like it's literally just a bunch of criminals getting together, kind of being good guys. Like they're kind of being morally more righteous than like actual like the Justice League are, and that's when it's fun. When it's not fun is when it's like hashtag edgy for the sake of edge.
I get you.
I get you completely. Because I've always been one like I love some of Neil Gaiman stuff. I love which is one comic I read recently. It's not from him specifically, but it's called Miracle Man.
Yeah, that was that one was written by Tom King, right?
It was that comic has a very I would suggest anybody listening to this to go look that history up because it is a thing. It happened.
I've heard bits and pieces of it, and it is it's wild.
I personally love that comic because, yeah, well, it does get dark in the sense of, yes, this shit is happening. Yes, it's getting hardcore. Yes, it's getting edgy. But at the same time, to tone towards it where it's happened, but they don't happen. I mean, it's a good character study and for someone like Miracle Man, who was just a thing that happened because a company in the UK couldn't use Shazam. That's a real story. It's fucking great.
Yeah, and that's kind of like what I like about this comic Secret Six / Legendary that Gail Simone did. So it's not like the comic was ever campy and fun. I mean, the comic literally like there's a character named Scandal and her like girlfriend literally gets murdered, and so like all the characters like take her to a strip club to try to make her happy and introduce her to a stripper that looks literally exactly like her ex that was just like murdered.
And then
like so she's super bummed out about it at first, and then they end up actually getting together, right? Her and the stripper. And my favorite part is the end of the comic. They find out, and I don't know if you saw it, but there's that Suicide Squad movie, the animated one that came out recently. I don't know if you watched that one.
I don't believe so, no.
Okay, well, they took the whole plot from this comic, but basically there's this card that's literally a get out of hell free card that exists, and Amanda Waller wants it. And so in the Secret Six comic, they are going after this card, and literally Scandal uses it, go to hell, drags her like dead girlfriend out of hell, and the comic literally ends with her girlfriend and the stripper girlfriend and this other girl. It's she's from Apocalypse. I can't remember her name at the moment. They basically just have like a polyamorous relationship, and that's how the comic ends. What a story. And Bane's there. Yeah, and Bane's there. Bane's great in this whole comic. Yeah, it's like, it's Bane, Scandal, Deadshot, this character named Ragdoll, who is like the greatest comic book character in the whole world. Basically, he's this guy who was like tortured by his parents, and his parents made him like break his bones over and over again and keep breaking them while they're broken. So he's like super ambidextrous. Like, he can just literally pop every bone as like a joint, essentially, which is why they call him Ragdoll. But he doesn't know how to like relate to people. He also eunuched himself, like he cut his own balls off.
Oof.
And but he's got this like super like optimistic like attitude about everything. Like like one time he's like, he like literally while wearing a Robin costume in Gotham, he's like, you ever want it's like to have sex with a butterfly, just like stuff like that. And there's one issue where Deadshot gets asked out on a date by Banshee, who's this like basically undead like hot chick from like the 1600s. And Deadshot's like super worried. He's like, I don't know what to wear. And Catman's there, and Catman sees like Deadshot's wearing this like black and yellow checkered blazer, and Catman's like, no, this is not happening. So he like literally dresses him up, and he like drags I can't remember, I think it's Scandal and her girlfriend onto a double date with Banshee. And I guess Ragdoll wanted to go, and they're like, no, Ragdoll, you're creepy. You creep out everybody. You can't go. Well, Ragdoll locks himself in the trunk of the car. And then there's this little comic at the end that looks like it's drawn by like a little kid. It's all super stylized, and it's like Ragdoll going on adventures with the Secret Six and the Suicide Squad. Then he becomes a Justice League member and gets a Green Lantern ring. And then the comic ends, and the normal artwork of the comic opens, and it's like Ragdoll has been locked in this trunk for 4 days, and that's what he was having a dream about, all that going on.
I love it.
Yeah, so yeah, that's like one of my favorite comic books right there. To get into like why I love Gail Simone, when she can be, when she's amazing, she's like freaking amazing. And she also retweeted the link to my comic the other day, which was even cooler.
That's very nice.
So, of course, on the flip side of that, let's go to the other half. So let's talk a little bit about that, because this is what the podcast is about, as the genetic opera would tell you. But yeah, so let's talk a little bit about that. So did you like get into the fandom? Like, I know like most people, you know, they start with Power Rangers and such like that. I wish my childhood was that nice, because I started with fucking Guyver, but that's neither here nor there.
That's better, dude. I mean,
I started with Guyver and Kuga, so you tell me how well I came out. Anyways, so
we don't have to tell you, we can just talk to you, we can figure it out.
Like, so you, once you started getting into the fandom, like, which is the one that basically, you know,
like hooked me?
Yeah, like the crowd of the internet crowd, like, you know, which is the one that, you know, helped you bring into the fandom. Like, I know the one that, the first series that I watched actually being an active member in the fandom was actually Double.
So for me, it was Gokaiser, and it was actually not even the series. It was the movie, the Great Hero Battle, right? The 199 Hero Battle.
Oh my goodness. I know so many. It's funny that you say that, because I know a lot of people who have actually gone into Sentai because of that. Like, they don't even know what Sentai is. They're just like, what the fuck are all these Power Rangers? What's going on here?
Yeah, I watched that video, and I was like, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen in my entire life. This is like, it beats Helm's Deep. It's like, the choreography was like amazing. The music with Gokaiser's theme during the whole fight was like the coolest thing I've ever seen in my life. And then like it got to the actual Gokaiser, and then it was like Mega Man, fucking Mega Man with their powers. And I'm like, hold up, they can just transform into like any generation of Sentai like ever. So like, yeah, Gokaiser is definitely my favorite Sentai series, like 100% bar none. I actually find myself though watching a lot of videos from the Showa era. I've never sat down and like watched full episodes from the Showa era, but like I love watching like roll call videos and like fight videos and like listening to theme songs of like Showa era stuff. Not that I dislike Heisei or anything. There's a lot to love with Heisei, but I think there's a bit of an element of fun that we lose when the shows are written for the toys first and the characters second.
I feel you. I'm a lot of the same way in terms of the watching the content in specific ways, and the way I interact with not necessarily the fan base, but the series as a whole, I guess I could put it.
Yeah, like I haven't actually sat down and like watched any of like the most recent series. I usually just watch like recaps and read reviews, mostly because I will say the thing that sucks about being an artist is it's hard drawing while you're like reading subtitles. It's like the worst.
That's true.
I usually just like watch like clips and like recaps, and I think like the most Heisei one that I absolutely adore is Drive. Drive is like so much fun. Now Double is like on my next list. I want to watch Double just because of Kamen Rider Skull. Like, that is aesthetic. I actually just pre-ordered Double Statue from GameStop just because I love the character design so much.
Yeah, Double and Drive, I mean, to be fair, they're both very beginner friendly in a sense, and to be fair, and they're written by the same guy, so they're very, very well thought. Honestly, I think
that would explain it.
Oh yeah, that does. That does make sense.
In my opinion, except for that's neither here nor there.
Didn't even hear what he said, but I gotta agree.
I mean,
I'm kind of like all over the place. I've got a little ADHD about what I like in the fandom, but yeah, I would say Gokaiger is like where I really felt a part of like the Sentai and Toku community. You know, like obviously I had like heard of Kamen Rider and researched about it and like looked up the character design, and then I think it was when The Great Hero 199 came out, I watched that movie like 20 times. I got all my friends to come over and watch it. I was like, this is the greatest thing I've ever watched in my life.
So, like you mentioned, like you don't actually go in, you haven't actually been able to watch any of like the more recent or even like post-decade stuff?
Yeah, basically. So like it's just more of like I watch videos and clips, and I'll watch fights and read reviews, and so I mean like I could literally tell you like when if you show me one of the main writers, I can identify most primary writers and maybe even secondary writers. Tertiary is where it gets a little weird. And then like
fucking writers in one series.
Yeah, so I usually know what happens in the series. Like I've been trying to like keep up with Re-Soldier as far as like what the plot's going, and it's not seeming good.
I don't know. I mean, from what I've heard and from what Jay and everyone else has told me, it seems like it's shaping up all right.
I'm pretty severely behind, but it's been fine.
I gave
the
up
first couple episodes.
Yeah, from what I've heard, it's like it has the capacity to get better, but there's no clear line in sight that it's gonna happen or not, which is kind of unfortunate. Like I get why they went with the dinosaur themed. It makes sense, you know. Toys are down. Like it sucks, but they gotta sell toys. I can't really fault them for that. But why call it like a Dragon Knight series? And
like I said, for me, the last Sentai series I ever watched, and the last series I ever enjoyed was GoBusters. So that's like I tapped out of Sentai a long time ago.
Yeah, that's fair. And like I love like the aesthetic of Sentai, but yeah, it seems like Kamen Rider has like the storytelling that I want, at least for the most part. And again, that's where like the fan community stuff comes in. That's like why I create stuff like Time Strikers and other people create stuff, is because they love, you know, Toku, but they aren't getting the stories they want. Sure, they get the aesthetics, but you know, we need a little bit more, and instead of waiting for it to happen, we make it happen. And that's like that's really neat, right? Like Texas actually has two other like original Toku series. I don't know if you guys knew that.
I've heard of that, but I've never seen, like I've heard that we have, and I've never seen it. I've never heard anything about it. I just know that it existed.
Yeah, so there's two that I at least know of that exist. So the there's one in Dallas. So it's called Immortal Red Fox. It's pretty cool. It's very unique and very different. You have to watch. There's only they have two episodes on YouTube right now. They're like 2 minutes long each. The second episode's got really good production, and it's pretty meta. And the suit design's awesome. Like I would say that's like their suits are awesome, and the action and editing is really good. And I think they're doing a third episode. Now, it's also a comic book, and like I'm friends with the guy who like writes it and kind of is the progenitor of it. And then it's a small world, but their artist is also like, I met him through like the Latino Comics Expo community in LA. But turns out he's big into Toku as well, and he's drawing their like stuff now for them, which is really cool. And then the other one is there's a cosplayer named Deca Mexican. I do believe he's from South Texas.
Oh my goodness, I know who you're talking about. Yes.
Yeah, and so he just launched his series Jammingers, and I will say like the suits are awesome. Like I will give it that. Like he's very much angling into like the cheesier, more playful part of Sentai, which is cool and fine. Their episode was like 17 minutes. Their first one, it's like track one or something like that. And it's definitely very indie filmish, like student filmish, like, you know, like the acting is what you expect, but I mean the passion is there, which is really cool. And these guys are really supportive too, which is like, it caught me off guard. Like, I posted, I was like, you know, I wanted to launch my Kickstarter to make something special, so I drew a picture that had Time Striker Pink, my character, alongside the Immortal Red Fox and Jam in Red. And Deca Mexican has a huge following, and he had reshared my image that I drew, which I got like almost 100 followers in one day thanks to him on Instagram. And a bunch of people pledged, and you know, he was like, hey, it'd be cool if something live action happens with Time Strikers. And now I'm like, well, you know what, I wasn't thinking that. I was thinking like cosplay at least, but now I'm like, shit, maybe I should. So I had this guy named Northstar Props, who's like a big 3D modeler in the Toku community. In fact, I found out he modeled all the helmets for both Immortal Red Fox and Jammingers, and the props and everything. Dude is slick and talented. I'm sure you've seen me post images on Facebook.
Yes, I have.
Yeah, and so I'm actually holding right now a small little mini test print of the helmet in my hand. It's like the size of a, you know, an apple or a small apple, but it's really cool. It's like weird seeing your stuff that you draw come to life. It's I can't even accurately describe it. So if it can happen, I'm so stoked at the idea that it could. Like, I would never make it like a mainline thing with the Time Strikers. Like, it's really gonna, the storytelling is gonna come from the comics, but I would probably do what the Immortal Red Fox does and do like 2-minute short episodes that just maybe focuses on a fight, and just something like unique and fun to do, and maybe some crossover if I can with the Deca Mexican and Immortal Red Fox. You know, my friend made up a term, called it Texas Satsu. And I was like, that's essentially what we're doing. It's a little Texas shared universe, which is cool.
So last few things here. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, outside, you know. I know that you are big into the Pokemon, as I am. I haven't played any of the games since Black 2, but I do like the Pokemon quite a bit.
Oh yeah, man. I saw you saw Detective Pikachu.
I did, actually. I liked it. I mean, of course, there's a few things that I see here and there that I would like to nitpick, but at the same time, I'm just like, I'll put that to the side just to enjoy it.
Yeah, no, I saw it. I love it, too. And yeah, like, I think that's, like, I'll admit, we have this huge culture that, like, can nitpick everything, right? Like, I'll admit, like, I saw Endgame, loved it, and afterwards I was like, what can I nitpick about it? And And it's important to nitpick those things, but I feel like...
Yeah, it's
very important, like, yes, I would agree.
Specifically, while watching it, I very much...
But I watched a good video, and he gave a really good, like, non-spoilerly description of why the shortcomings of the Pokemon movie ultimately don't matter. And it was really unique. It was like, he basically said, like, the villains... and the plot of the movie is basically what you would see straight up in the anime. And you could argue that, like, they were just extremely faithful to the audience of the Pokemon series. They weren't trying to do a, like, super edgy Justice League Pokemon movie. It, you know, as cheesy as it could get to the moment, as, like, the villain could be, like, you see it coming from a mile away, it didn't focus on that. What it focused first and foremost was making the Pokemon world be believable, and... holy hell, did it did that.
Well, I do agree with that at one point. At the same time, it kind of did hit many times in the movie where I was just like, that's maybe what they're going for. But at the same time, I just think to myself, make me want to forgive these little shortcomings. Like, I think I was telling Jay, like, a few times in the movie, I kept thinking to myself, if they had anybody but Ryan Reynolds, or if they had Pikachu not talk at all in this movie nearly as much as I am right now.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I can agree with that.
I'll be fair. Like, the two actors, the main lead and the girl sidekick, I believe they're newer. I'm not sure. I don't know. But they felt kind of campy in a way. I was just like, that's very distracting.
Yeah, they see, and this is what the video basically said, was like, you know, the characters act cartoonish, which, I mean, I guess if you're doing a live action version of the Pokemon cartoon, they hit that for better or for worse. But yeah, Pikachu was definitely the center mark of the movie. Like, I think, yeah, if they Ryan Reynolds had to be a part of this movie's success, and I kind of wonder if this movie was extremely calculated, right? Like, it had a simple plot to engage a young audience, and then it had Ryan Reynolds and a relatable character for us, because, I mean, I will say, like, it was weird that the main character isn't this super ultra cool, like, Pokemon trainer who's just good at everything he does. He is like, the least shonen protagonist of all time. He is literally a burnt-out 20-something-year-old whose dreams never happened because his parents got divorced. Or not divorced, but other things. But basically, like, broken family, right? Like, I was like, whoa, what? You mean you're not gonna have, like, a super loving, like, parent, and, like, you know, he wins on his adventure. It's a, like, broken kid with a broken job with a broken dream, and I'm like, oh, that's a little too relatable. But then you have Ryan Reynolds as a Pikachu drinking coffee, and I'm like, all right, I feel good again.
Like I said, there was a lot of tonal clash in the movie. Like, the character was talking about, you know, his dad and how he felt bad that his dad could never be there, and he couldn't say, you know, his dad really did care, and, you know, him breaking down. Myself during the movie, where I'm like, this would be good. Reynolds sitting there in a fucking Pikachu costume. Like, but right. And maybe it's just the actor, like, and, like, not even just him. It was, like, most people, they just felt off. Again, maybe it was just they're trying to be 20. It was very distracting at certain points.
Yeah, and I imagine it had to be hard to, like, basically talk about the Pokemon world as if they were so serious that it existed. Like, I never thought I would ever hear Bill Nighy say the word Pokemon in my entire life.
Yeah.
For me, I, like, a lot of the shortcomings, I was able to at least think about them too much, because most of the movie I was just kind of, like, amazed. Like, oh my goodness, they're making Pokemon anatomically correct, and you can see the sizes of, like, the actual bugs, and
the whole underground battle scene was worth the entire movie.
Like, seeing all of that, seeing, oh, this is how big Pikachu would be, he's a tiny little fucker, like, that's cool, I like that. Again, but it's just one of those things where I like it, but I'm not gonna be like, this is a perfect movie. I mean, maybe if they do more movies with this type of idea, you know, it's a realist, like, a real world Pokemon. I mean, that'd be cool. I mean, they already said,
well, that. I think that was the idea behind this movie, is they had to kind of do this, like, short, simple, easy to digest movie, so you don't have to worry about exposition to get all the casual folk back into it who haven't, like, watched Pokemon in years. And then this could easily lead into future Pokemon movies where they're not necessarily having Ryan Reynolds voice Pikachu again, because obviously, you know, not, no spoilers, but yeah, like, it's not happening.
I actually haven't seen it yet, so.
Oh, dude, I am so sorry.
No, it's fine, so.
Yeah, I feel like spoilers for Detective Pikachu aren't as bad as spoilers for Endgame, but I'm still not going to spoil it.
I don't really care that much, but I know.
Yeah, that's what I was saying.
The movie yesterday, so.
Yeah, yeah. So anyways, it's at the end of the day, it's worth seeing.
Yeah.
Spoilers for Pikachu isn't going to be as bad as, you know, Iron Man dies, so it's fine.
Yeah, exactly.
I saw the P3 review saying that Sora dies. You know, I was going to slip that in there somewhere.
How about that Kamen Rider Drive cameo, though?
Oh, yeah, he was in the movie. I heard he was in the movie for 3 seconds at the beginning and didn't do anything.
It's the greatest 3 seconds of my life, though. Canon, red is canon. Like, I'll fight everyone on that one. He is red, and he is
honestly
the perfect guy to play red.
If they make him lead in a sequel, I'd be fine with that.
No, that was the funny thing, actually. Apparently, it's already been confirmed. He is not supposed to be red, because this takes place in the anime universe, which makes a lot of sense due to the plot of the movie.
Because that makes him Ash? Right. I don't know. He'd be fine.
I don't think
Ash.
He's supposed to be Ash. Ash, I think he's just supposed to be a trainer, you know what I mean? Because, like, who the fuck with the chicken football at? Fucking Domino? I don't know.
Overall, I feel like it's a movie that we shouldn't think about the minor details like that. Just, like, go in and enjoy it. It's a fun movie. It's digestible.
Like, I even told when I went to go see it, like, I thought this movie was going to be at best, but no, I thoroughly enjoyed myself. Like, I mean, and of course, for me, you know, I'm very much into the Pokemon, like, especially Gen 1, where, like, the little jokes that they had Ryan Reynolds throw in there, like one of my favorite ones. This might be a spoiler, but it's a joke, whatever. Where like he's asking like if a Pidgeotto to learn how to fly on the ground. That's a that hurts because I'm just like, that's beautiful. That's a beautiful joke for anyone who ever played the games.
Him like tearing apart Tim was the greatest part of the movie. Like the part was like, you ever talk to girls? When's the last time you talked to a girl outside of the
like legit? Like anytime they had Ryan, I honestly, Ryan Reynolds carried this movie. But yeah, I would say we'll watch it. Said though, is there anything like you know? Is there anything else you would like to say about you know your comic, your Kickstarter, anything else before we got to go tonight?
Well, I mean, first of all, thank you guys for having me on. This has been a lot of fun, even if it, like we're just talking about everything. This is a blast. You guys are awesome, and I'll definitely be a listener now. Like, I apologize if I hadn't listened in the past. Actually, I don't even think I realized you did a podcast until like you commented on my post. I've seen you do polls, but I thought it was just like your generic like Facebook group poll thing. But now I'm like,
I'm not like he who shall not be named who makes a poll about literally every tiny thing.
I see it. I see it in those groups.
The things his feet are
like, I don't care.
But yeah. So about my Kickstarter again. Thank you guys for having me on, and like I really really hope anyone who. This thing said like this is something they want to be a part of and help make happen. I'm really really thankful that unlike Red Visor Go, it seems like Time Strikers is actually seeing good reception from the Toku community. Like as we speak, someone's just told me they're gonna someone that I met through the Toku community is like, I'm gonna pledge to the $100 tier, and I'm like, oh okay, cool, yeah. So that means we are a lot closer to our goal during this recording than I thought it was going to be. Awesome. But yeah, it'd be awesome if anyone helps out. And just in case they're curious about how Kickstarter works, you can actually pledge without having the money in your account because it won't charge you until the campaign ends on June 6th. So just be careful. You can pledge now. Just make sure you have that money there on that date. And then it does give you a week if something comes up because life happens. But I'm thankful for any support. Share it around. Share it in groups. Tell your friends about it, and I'm hoping to do some cool stuff with the stretch rewards. I think people are gonna like it.
But yeah, also if you guys you know actually want the links, I'll just ask him right now for all the links. You know, not just the Kickstarter, his all of his social media links. I know you got Twitter. I know you got Facebook.
Yeah, I'm trying to be better on Twitter. I just like this week is like the most I've been on Twitter.
Like I said, do you have any other links for those? Like, I don't know, a Tumblr or anything?
So I don't have Tumblr. Not anymore. I tried it for like 5 minutes, and it's not as good as it used to be like 6 years ago. I guess especially since recently I've heard Tumblr is kind of dead. But no, I'm on Instagram. That's kind
of what happens. You eliminate 90% of the people who you post.
Are porn. But yeah, I'm on Instagram the most. That's definitely the best way to contact me. It's all my URLs are literally AFJART, so AFJART. And I'm trying to be better on Twitter, so follow me on Twitter. I want to make things happen better there. From what I've heard, that is the place to get things done is Twitter. So I feel like a missed opportunity there. I do have Facebook pages.
Twitter is very much a good place to post your art because Twitter is very much just, oh, I like this. Like, and then that like is seen by literally every one of those people's followers. So it's a very good place for that type of stuff.
Yeah, so I'm definitely going to be more active on posting on there. I have to make myself more diligent. And I guess I do have a Patreon. I keep forgetting that's a thing that I have. I don't do anything with it particularly. I remember to post things time to time. But if you want to do like, if you want to pledge $1 a month and help me afford lunch time to time, and I'll try to do more if I get a bigger following on there and put some more original stuff. But overall, but yeah, I if you want to put those links in the description or whatever you do, I can send you all that too. But it's basically just AFJ art. It's real simple, easy, and straight to the point.
Well, all right. With that being said, I do thank you guys for listening to this interview. This was kind of like a really hashtag, like just don't you go thing. Like it was very much just like, you know, he put a post. I was just like.
Yeah, was it kind of a did it like second that. Thing there?
Yeah, and if you guys ever want to have me on again, even if it's not.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you guys are great.
Of course, like we're always up for you know guests. We're always up for guest people. You know, it's always nice to have someone new on the podcast. You know, give their fresh take on anything, or their wrong take, as I would say. yeah. So that being said, I do thank you guys again, and we'll see you guys for the next episode, which is Sensei Openings. I really hope that none of you vote for fucking.
Don't jinx it, because now it's gonna happen.
Look, they made Ghost number 2, okay, and I'm still mad. Well,
now you just spoiled it.
Okay, listen, I'm sorry, but like, I hate Ghost, but Ghost Openings bops.
It doesn't beat anything Ghost, and it certainly isn't number 2.
Out of every opening, it's definitely not number 2. Nowhere close.
Yeah, I don't know what my favorite is. I think it's Surprise for Drive. I might be biased, but I like that one.
You'll like the episode when it comes out, then.
Right, yeah, absolutely.
So we'll see you guys then. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And stopping now.